It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News Podcast Network, I'm Dana Perino, and everything will be okay. Hello and welcome back. Last week, we spoke to fashion designer and author Rebecca Minkoff about her entrepreneurial success and perseverance through the pandemic. I really enjoyed her thoughts about signing your own permission slip and not waiting for approval from others. That is so important to keep in mind when making big career and life decisions. Remember, you're in charge of those decisions, nobody else. So take charge of it and make good decisions for yourself. My guest this week has given me such great inspiration for working hard, doing well, and just being a real positive force in our world. The window for success felt like it was narrowing as I finished graduate school, when I'd expected the opposite. Plus, at the time, the three main networks all were anchored by the same three men I'd been watching since I was a kid. How could I get ahead? I started to question my choices. Maybe my plan was wrong, which was a hard pill to swallow since I'd taken out quite a hefty student loan to pay for graduate school. Lesson alert number 3. Changing course is to be expected, not avoided. Embrace the change. Matthew West is a musician, singer-songwriter, and father of 2 girls. In this conversation, we discuss his upbringing and how he broke into the music industry, the values that guide his life, his thoughts on our current times and fatherhood, and the mission behind his work. Matthew, it's an honor to have you. I was really thrilled to be on your amazing and very popular podcast when Everything Will Be Okay came out. And then out of that, we became friends, which is really amazing. I love to pinch myself about that. And I admire you so much and really wanted my listeners to have a chance to learn more from you. So thanks for coming on.
Well, it's my honor. I'm a huge fan of yours, and to, you know, call you friend as well has been such a thrill in the recent months. And your book is awesome. Your episode on my podcast, people absolutely flipped out. And I had a lot of friends that said, how did you get the great Dana Perino? So I scored like major cool points with a lot of people.
Okay, well, I'm going to try to do the same. Hey, just to get started, so people that might not know you, tell me a little bit about your upbringing, where you grew up, and then a big decision early on in your life, I think, which I read online that you love sports.
Yes.
You wanted to get a baseball scholarship to play in college. And, you know, in the book, I talk about, you know, you have these ideas and plans and then things don't work out, but that actually turns out to be okay.
Yeah. And that part of your book resonates especially loud with me because I have learned over and over again that sometimes the best things that ever happen to us are the things that never happen to us. It's the dreams that we thought should come true that turned into a closing door that wound up redirecting and guiding our lives in the direction they were always meant to go. We think we have the best plan for our lives. And then, you know, here's a shocker. Sometimes we don't. So, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, Illinois, and, you know, I'm in the shadows of Wrigley Field, and you know, it was a dream of mine to play first base for a Major League Baseball team, and I thought I was pretty good, you know. Plus I was blessed to have parents who, you know, made me believe anything was possible. According to my dad, I was the greatest baseball player since Babe Ruth. But you know, I wound up not getting any scholarship offers. The Chicago Sun-Times did an article at one point, and they listed me as a top college prospect. And I didn't get a single scholarship. I didn't get drafted. We had scouts coming to our games. I thought they were watching me, Dana. They were watching my buddy in center field. He got drafted by the White Sox, tore his ACL. Now he's a dentist. And now I'm a singer in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm doing an interview with Dana Perino. So life hasn't gone the way I thought it would, but I'll tell you what, it's 100% better because, you know, fast forward, when one dream went away, I started just developing a passion for music and songwriting. And it turns out the whole time I was focused on sports, Dana, people were in my life saying, hey, you've got a gift for music, but I just wasn't paying attention because I had my like baseball blinders on. When those were taken off, that's when I began to realize maybe music is my future.
It's really interesting. So wait, is Nashville getting a team?
You know what? We're hoping. There's a whole bunch of people lobbying and trying to make it all happen, but I'm hearing that, you know, I don't know the frequency of which new expansion teams get added, but I've heard that, like, Las Vegas is the favorite for every sport now, right? So Las Vegas might beat Nashville out this time
around. I don't know. I mean, if I were a baseball, I would definitely go to Nashville. I mean, look at the support. Well, I guess Las Vegas is the same, but, like, the support for your hockey team is incredible.
Man. And the football team. I mean, the Titans.
Oh, yeah. How can I forget?
We've got some good stuff going on in Nashville. I know you're a fan of Nashville, and you're a big champion of the songwriter community. So Nashville has so much to offer, and it's a city that's growing like crazy. I personally would be excited if a Major League Baseball team came. Of course, you know, I'd be waiting for them to call me to come try out for the team, and I'm afraid that call
You could sing the national anthem.
Well, you know what the coolest thing was? Is several years later, when my music career started to take off, I got the opportunity, and I've done this at many stadiums now, but especially the special one for me was going back to Wrigley Field, where my dad used to take me all those years as a child. I got to take my dad to Wrigley Field, and I didn't get to play in the game, but I got to sing the national anthem at Wrigley Field. And you talk about a full circle moment where you realize, you know what, maybe there's a bigger plan for my life than I'm aware of. So I got on the field after all, Dana. How cool is that?
So is that, who do you support? What team?
Well, now I'm kind of I'm a bit of a fair weather fan because you kind of make friends in different industries and then you start rooting for those people. And so when we travel around the country, a lot of times we'll do these faith and family concerts after a baseball game. And then they'll give me, you know, we'll play in Houston, Texas, and they'll give me a jersey and a hat and I'll meet some of the players. And guess what? I kind of want the Astros to win. And then, then I go to Kansas City and I'm singing at the Chiefs game in the NFL. And I'm like, well, I never cheered for the Chiefs before, but now I kind of want them to win. So my friends in Chicago call me a fair weather fan, but my heart truly does belong to the Chicago Cubs.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I have a question. So your dad was a pastor. Is that right?
Yeah, my dad was a minister in the Chicago suburbs. He preached at the same church for 38 years. So that was all I ever knew. And I'm a preacher's kid. And
so he thought you were a great baseball player, but did he think you were talented musically?
He did. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I mean it. My mom and my dad, you want to talk about some champions in my life. And I've come to realize just how grateful I should be for that, not to take it for granted.
Yeah, let me tell you. Absolutely.
Right. To have parents in your corner that are cheering you on. In fact, when we all realized that baseball was not going to be in my future, and I came to my parents and I said, hey, you know, I think maybe music is what I want to do. And a mom and dad could be scared to death that their son's going to wind up singing, you know, karaoke contest every Thursday night at Chuck E. Cheese or something, you know. And so, but instead, my parents just said, hey, we believe in you. We think you do have a gift for music and we're going to be cheering you on. All these years later, how cool is this? They're still cheering me on. In fact, my dad travels with me on the road as our chaplain and helps keep me and my band out of trouble. And it's just so cool that now we get to work together. So they've always championed me and encouraged my dreams. And I'll never forget, there was one moment, Dana, my dad said, you know, do you think you should maybe get an education degree as a backup plan? You know, maybe you could be a music teacher if your singing career doesn't work out. And my dad reminded me the other day, actually, he said, do you know what your answer to that question was? I said, I think I do. He said, here's exactly what you said. That's going to be a fallback plan. And if I sign myself up for that, then I'll probably fall back on that. And so I don't want to give myself a plan B. And man, I guess I just always had that kind of determination and it served me well in life. I haven't had to get a job as a teacher just yet.
We'll be right back with more of this interview after this.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
I am really into, I love country music. I love the songwriting part of it. I was a country music DJ way back when. I, I saw you wrote for Billy Ray Cyrus, and when I was in 1992, three, I was a country music DJ working overnights for minimum wage in Pueblo, Colorado, for Pueblo, Colorado Springs. And the number one song in the country at the time was Achy Breaky Heart. I had to play that song at the top of the hour, every hour for months. I had it in my head for years. Please tell me you didn't work on that song.
Well, I tell you what, I wish I did, because if I wrote that song, I'd be flying to come and see you in person in my helicopter, in my Achy Breaky Heart helicopter. But yeah, that was one of those songs that you love to hate because they played it so much.
Oh my gosh. Yes. But
whoever wrote it is sitting pretty with some mailbox money coming in every month.
But a lot of people will be in Nashville for a long time, or say that they want to get into music, right? And some of them, like you look like a Taylor Swift, knows early on. She goes as a teenager, and they're grinding it out every day, and they're working so hard, and they don't take a break, and maybe they have a second job. What was your break?
Man, you know what's crazy? So I was studying music at this conservatory at a great college in Decatur, Illinois. Shout out to Milliken University. And so here I was in Decatur, Illinois, 6 hours from Nashville, but I had my eyes on Nashville. And my big break was somebody who I didn't even know had secretly paid my way to go to this music seminar that took place. It's funny, you mentioned Pueblo, Colorado, in Estes Park, Colorado. Mm-hmm. In the Rocky Mountains, there was a seminar that I wasn't even aware of, and it was for specifically the contemporary Christian music industry, where all these industry professionals would come, and then you could sort of enter your songs into a competition and get critiqued. And so somebody at my college who wanted to remain anonymous had paid for me to go to this seminar. And another person at the university said, hey, there's a bunch of us who think you should do this, and it's already been paid for. And I thought, well, I'm supposed to mow lawns this summer for the park district. You know, should I do this? And I called my dad, which is what I've done for many years when I need advice. And he said, hey, son, this looks like an opportunity. You need to walk through this open door. And it was traveling to Colorado where I met somebody who later became my champion, somebody who saw something in the first songs that I was writing and believed that I was going to be part of a next generation of singers and songwriters. And that relationship developed during the rest of my time in college. And 2 weeks before I got my diploma, I got another envelope in the mail at my dorm, and it was a songwriting contract. Can you believe that?
Wow. No, I mean, that's actually, it's so unusual and so wonderful.
It was the coolest thing. And I ran around my dorm. I ran straight to my professor's office because he didn't think it was really happening. And I said, look, I did it. I'm going to be rich. And, you know, lo and behold, I looked at the contract and it was like $10,000 I was going to get paid. And I thought I was a Rockefeller. I mean, $10,000 to write songs. How cool is that?
And did you play the guitar?
Yeah, so I didn't start instruments until later on. My parents tried to have me take piano lessons as a kid, but I just kind of got bored with it. And so singing was the main thing that I did. I was like the lead in the school musical.
Oh, okay.
So I would sneak out of baseball practice to go be Jesus in Godspell, and my team would give me a hard time. But so I did always have a love for music, but it wasn't my passion. When I went to college, Dana, it was a crash course. I was a music major, so I was surrounded by all of these brilliant musicians. So I picked up a guitar, and I'm watching a great guitar player, and I'm learning from them. I had a poster I went and bought from the nearby Walmart, and I put it up on my dorm, and it showed me how to play all the chords. And so during the day, I would be learning classical music, and then at night, I'd be in my dorm room trying to learn songs by Hootie and the Blowfish so that I could play at the fraternity party that weekend.
Ah, it's so, so cool. It's very cool. Vince Gill, is he as great as I think?
Oh, he's the best. I mean, one of the highlights of my career was I wrote a Christmas song called Leaving Heaven. And the message of the song, it's just this little singer-songwritery acoustic guitar song. And the idea is about, you know, how God would love us so much that he would leave the splendor of heaven to walk a broken earth and bring light to a dark world, the message of Christmas. And I had this crazy idea. I told my producer, I said, how cool would it be if Vince Gill would play guitar and sing on this song? And my producer was one of those guys who just thought, well, you don't know unless you ask. And so we called Vince. I texted Amy Grant, his wife, because I knew her. And I said, I know this is a long shot and he probably gets asked a million times, do you think Vince would ever entertain the thought of singing with me on my record? Her response back was, why don't you ask him? And then gave me his cell phone.
Wow.
And I was like, wait, I have Vince Gill's cell phone. So I just took a chance. I asked him. He showed up at my studio. He wouldn't even let me compensate him. He showed up. It was a class act through and through. And one of the coolest moments of my career is now recorded. And it's a sweet, sweet song.
I got to see the last concert I saw, last event I had before COVID.
Yeah.
Was I got invited by a good friend, Mitch Rochelle. He invited Peter and me to Madison Square Garden to see the Eagles.
Yes.
And Vince Gill is with the band now. And wow, that was amazing. I loved it.
Can you believe? I mean, he is so talented.
So talented and so humble about it all.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of like the opposite of a rock star. You know what I mean? Like, and I'll tell you, that's one of the fun things about Nashville. And you've probably seen it even in your times here. But, you know, the biggest stars are some of the most unassuming people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I was walking through Whole Foods one day and Nicole Kidman standing right in front of me. And I know mm-hmm. she's not a music artist, but she's married to Keith Urban. And it's just, you'll see that all the time in Nashville. It's very,
I'm pretty good friends with JT Harding.
Oh, what a
who has a list of songs that, for those of you who think you're not getting mentored right now, you are. Just trust me. We're getting to some really good stuff here in a second. JT Harding has written lots and lots of songs. And well, I got to go to this event with him, who introduced me to Scott Hendricks, who was a big producer. And then he introduced me to someone who's become also a very good friend of mine. And what a person who walks with God, who has gone through a lot of adversity, but is so cheerful. And that's Amy Mayo, has written so many songs. This one's for the girls, Amaze. I mean, you go on and on. And she is just the most unassuming, accomplished person. And I find that a lot in Nashville. And I think it's probably not universally true, but there's a humility that comes from the success there. And it seems like that's part of the culture.
It really is. I mean, and I think a lot of it does come from the songwriters. You know, I kind of have these dual careers, Dana, where I'm a songwriter behind the scenes writing songs for other artists in country music and Christian music. But then I also have a record deal, so I make my own records. So I get to kind of see it from both sides. But I will say some of the most humble and they're so talented that they could be less than humble if they wanted to be. But case in point, last week I had a guy named Casey Beathard at my house. Now, if you haven't met Casey, Dana, you need to. I mean, he's just a walking inspiration, one of the great songwriters, a Hall of Famer that Nashville has ever seen. He's written a ton of the Eric Church songs, a bunch of Kenny Chesney songs. He wrote No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problem. I mean,
yep.
You name it. He's written such great poetry. In fact, he has a song on Eric Church's new record called Lynyrd Skynyrd Jones that if you haven't heard it, you got to listen to it. But you know, Casey's son was murdered in Nashville in January in the pandemic. And Casey and his family have been through a storm like no family would ever, you know, dream of going through. Now, Casey's other son plays in the National Football League as a quarterback, but he sat at my house and he's telling me his story and we're just talking about God's faithfulness. And you just get to meet all these incredible individuals and where their inspiration comes from. You know, a lot of songwriters, you know, we find inspiration in the broken parts of our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's where I ultimately find hope. In Nashville, you get to see it every day. Even during a pandemic, Dana, it was so cool to see songwriters writing these songs of hope that were rising up out of the ashes of a really broken season in our nation and in our world. And so, I don't know, there's just a really special thing going on in Nashville. And you've been a real champion for songwriters, and that means a lot to us.
What's it been like to get back out on the road? There's it's one thing to be the star of the show, but you have a band and you have people to put together the shows, and they couldn't work. And it was really worrisome for a lot of people for a long time. And now you're back out on the road. What's that been like?
Well, there's an anticipation from our crew and our guys like never before. Like I tell you what, when we hit the stage, it feels like we're shot out of a cannon because we are like, we're chomping at the bit. I mean, imagine, like, literally I had 90 concerts canceled, like off the books, and multiply that by every artist in Nashville and you know, from the biggest to the smallest, and all of these band members and crew members were left, you know, I had a guitar player with a baby girl who had to go hang drywall for a season, you know, and I could literally go person for person and talk about how the pandemic affected them individually. And so you want to talk about the other night we got back on a tour bus. And it was just like, I wanted to hug the bus driver. You know what I mean? But most bus drivers, they're not the hugging type. But it was just this excitement and gratitude. And then here's the full circle. We get on stage. And guess who else is grateful? The people in the crowd.
Yeah,
like never
absolutely.
Before. Like you can just taste and sense this like anticipation and being thankful that something's been restored to us that was taken away for so long. Not to mention everybody, you know, and their livelihood. So I've been trying to take as many concerts as possible to make sure that my band and my crew can get back to work as quickly as possible.
So you're also a dad. And you're a girl dad, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because you have a new song out, and I want you to tell me a little bit about that and about the summer and how this all came to be as you tried to raise these independent, fantastic young girls to be the best that they can be, and what you decided to do this summer.
Yeah, so my wife Emily and I, we just celebrated our 18th anniversary, and we have two amazing daughters. Lulu is 15. Yeah, thank you. And Delaney is 12 years old. And that's actually one of the many reasons why I was excited to have you on my podcast, was because of the focus of your book and because of your heart and desire to mentor young women as they're coming through life and trying to carve out their path. And I'm always, as a dad, like, look, I grew up in a house full of boys. And so having daughters, I'm like, I'm hitting my knees every day going, God help me. I don't know what I'm doing.
Especially 12 and 15. Those are not easy.
Especially last night, I'm having this conversation with my oldest, like, should she or shouldn't she break up with, you know, this boy? And I'm like, oh, and I'm just like, literally while I'm listening, like, I'm actually praying, going, okay, God, help me not to screw this one up. Because these are pivotal moments when, you know, your daughter's trying to feel you out. Can I trust Dad with this type of conversation?
Well, and you want your daughters to be able to keep talking to you for as long as they can. And I think having a dad that's willing to listen, and, you know, a lot of times, and I think I wrote about this in the book. If not, I talk about it. Sometimes, even, and women can do this too, but let's say that your loved one is telling you a problem, especially girls, right? They just want to be heard. They don't want you to try to solve it for them.
Oh,
and sometimes men will jump in right away and say, well, here, this is how we'll fix it. It's like, I know how to fix it. All right, just let me talk it out. And I think that, you know, your girls probably enjoy learning from you from that example.
Oh, I'm trying so hard to be the latter, like what you just described, because you're exactly right. That is the tendency, especially as a protective dad. You want to step in and like, wait, this boy said what? I'm going over there. You know what I mean? So it is like trying to just, and I, every time my daughters have a heart to heart talk with me, my heart smiles, because I feel like, okay, as much as I think I'm screwing up as a dad, maybe I'm doing something right enough that they would feel comfortable to talk to me. And so, you know, and I think what it really gets to, you mentioned, like, my latest song is a song called What If, and the heartbeat of that song is to reach the end of our lives with no what ifs, no regrets. So the lyric says, what if today's the only day I got? I don't want to waste it if it's my last shot. You know, and it talks about, you know, in the end, I want to know I got no regrets and no what ifs. And one of the things that's really been on my mind and my heart over the last couple of years, and I think maybe even accelerated by what our country and our world have gone through, is we're going to ask what if questions one way or the other. We can choose to face some of the what if questions in the present moment, make some changes we need to make, live our lives to the fullest, or we can wait until it's too late and we're looking back on our lives and we're riddled with regrets. Nobody wants to be in that position at the end of their lives. One of the stories that has impacted me the deepest was a lady who wrote to me about her estranged father, who was not the dad he needed to be, wasn't the husband he needed to be. Relationships had been just devastated and severed, and the kids didn't have anything to do with their dad until they find out that he's on his deathbed. And this now grown woman wrote to me and she said, you know, I just felt like I needed to go be with him, even though he wasn't with me when I needed him. So she chose the path of forgiveness, as hard as it was. She sits down by his bedside and they're in the hospital. And she said, and I don't know why she included this part in her story, but it really impacted me and I've never forgotten it. She said that there was a moment of quiet and like just honesty where the dad just spoke up and said, I missed it, didn't I? I missed it. And those words just, I mean, how heavy is that? And she tried to encourage him and say, well, we have right now. You're not missing it right now. And I think that's one of the things that story haunts me in the best way, because I don't want to be in that position looking back saying, I missed it with my kids. I missed it with my wife. I missed it in my life. I was climbing this ladder to the top and I got to the top and realized it was up against the wrong building. You know what I mean? And so we've been on a mission as a family and myself as an individual just to make sure that I'm treating like this. What if today's the only day I've got? You know, we don't think about that often enough.
So what have been some of the things that they've come up with that they wanted to do that you thought, oh gosh, really?
Well, one of the craziest things was my oldest daughter, Lulu. She's an adventurer, Dana. Like, she's fearless. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, what her story is going to wind up being. But if this is any indication, then just pray for me, because I said, hey, I want to take you on a special daddy-daughter weekend and we'll do whatever you want. She goes, Dad, I decided what I want to do for our weekend. I said, anything. She said, I want to go swimming with sharks. I said, anything but that. But, you know, then I thought, well, do I squelch her adventurous spirit or do I man up?
You go.
And so guess what? I surprised her one day. I said, hey, get your bags. We're going to Florida and we're going to swim with sharks.
Wow.
And it was the worst experience of my life.
Really?
Well, I was scared to death. Like, I mean, ever since I saw Jaws 1 through 5 as a kid, why my parents let me watch Jaws as a kid?
My mom and dad never let me watch it.
Oh, man.
I never have seen it.
but we went and we did that and we survived it. And she had the most amazing time of her life. And and I had the most amazing time watching her have the most amazing time, even though I was having an hour long, you know, panic attack at 150 foot deep water out in Florida somewhere with bull sharks swimming all around us. But, you know, the it doesn't always have to be that. Some of it has been, hey, we're going to put our devices down and we're going to force a family walk today.
Okay.
And, you know, so some of it's been very just like practical. And for me as a dad, like, it's like, okay, I got three girls in my house. You know what? Three date nights every week, man, that's going to get expensive and that's time consuming. But really, can I afford not to do that? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is, and so, in fact, Saturday night, I surprised my wife. She's a huge Garth Brooks fan. I hope she's a bigger Matthew West fan, but I think she actually might like Garth more than me, but surprise her with tickets. We're going to see Garth and it's going to be epic and we're going to have a date night. So, you know, quality time as a dad and as a family, I think that's been one of the huge ways that we're, you know, making sure that we're not having any regrets, because time's flying, Dana, and the time that we get with our loved ones.
Like that song of Kenny Chesney's, you know, Don't Blink.
Oh, Don't Blink.
That's a great song.
I actually quote that song in another song of mine. I wrote a song called The Beautiful Things We Miss. And the lyric says, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to look back one day and find everything that really mattered was right in front of me this whole time. Mm-hmm. Open up my eyes, Lord. Keep me in the moment just like this before the beautiful things we love become the beautiful things we miss. And later on, I quote Chesney. I said, we don't get, they were right when they said, don't blink. It all goes faster than you think. So these are the things that I'm thinking about lately. I can't help but wonder if maybe that's doing part to just what, like I said, what we've been through.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we're all being reminded, like, hey, don't take this day for granted. Like, if your heart's beating and you're breathing, then God still has you here on this earth for a reason. Don't waste it. And I don't want to waste it. That's like one of my biggest fears. And I don't know, maybe not fear, but it's just something that really challenges me in a good way.
More to come right after this. Do you have any tips for helping daughters the age of yours, or even maybe when they're younger, but I think this is around the age when they start getting the anxiety about their future. And it can be quite overwhelming. And one of the things I ask in the book is that I ask all of the readers, please don't worry your young lives away. I really feel like I worried my 20s away for no reason. When I look back, like all the worries I did not lead me to the opportunities that I stumbled upon or that came my way.
I think that's a great point. And part of that worry comes from, like, why is it so hard for us to be content in the moment we're in? You know what I mean?
Serenity. That's a whole chapter on serenity. That's like that's God's gift to you are these glimpses of the peace.
And I don't care if you're male, female, this is part of the human condition. And I have struggled with this in my entire life. I'm tell you what, my brother who managed me for 5 years, he texted me great. He said, great news. You got nominated for a Grammy Award. My response was, which category? Mm-hmm. His response was Christian Song of the Year. My response, not album? ? Mm. His response, many expletives. Like, what's the matter with you? But
right.
But I say that as an example of, like, man, there's one thing to have ambition and to keep striving and keep climbing. And that's part of what we're supposed to do with our lives as well, is to work at it and dream and have vision. But man, that there can be an unhealthy side to that. And one of the things, if I'm being honest with you, Dana, that I'll get concerned about is, what are my kids seeing in me? And so if you ask, okay, what can I give as advice in terms of raising young girls as they're trying to figure out, maybe having anxiety over what to do with their lives? I obviously have to set the example as a parent. My wife, it's up to us that our words line up with our actions. And so I could encourage them, hey, just enjoy the moments. God's going to show you what his plan for your life is. Rest in that. Continue to be open to opportunities. But if all they see is a dad and mom riddled with anxiety, never content with what they have, always thinking the grass is greener, always trying to keep up with whoever they're competing with or whatever, then my words are going to fall on deaf ears, because they've seen dad never be content because he got nominated for this Grammy, but he's all in a bad mood about this. And so I'm trying to set a better example of contentment. But in terms of advice for my daughters, I do want them to understand that their life is a story. And my parents always encouraged me that we get fooled into thinking we're the author of our own story. And if I could give my daughters any advice, I do hope that they realize that there's a bigger story at play. And they may not understand what's going on at all times, but I do believe that the maker of their story is the author of their story. And if I could see anything take place in their lives, it would be that they dare to believe that somebody else has a better plan for them. And when they step towards that direction, then, just like this failed baseball player turned musician, you're going to find fulfillment like you've never known before, because you realize there's a bigger story than you can see.
I love that's beautiful. We should finish off the Grammy story, though, right? You won. Didn't you win?
Well, no, I'm still waiting.
Oh, not the Grammy. But you were country music. What was the Songwriter of the Year? What was that one?
I won Songwriter of the Year. So the Christian music industry has the Dove Awards, which is like the Grammy Awards for Christian music. So, of course, it's a Dove, right? Mm-hmm. And then instead of platinum records, they give gold, frankincense, and myrrh. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. But I have been very fortunate, and just to be recognized. The songwriting is where my real passion is. So whenever I win a songwriting driven award from ASCAP or Billboard, it's really special.
How have things changed so much in terms of how you measure success with how the music industry has changed since when you started? You know, because it used to be that I would buy an album, right? Or that was going way back, or a cassette tape, or to download a song meant like waiting till it came on the radio again and hitting play and record at the same time. Or then CDs. And now with Spotify, for example, like, do you find the way that you measure your own success to be changing as well?
It's definitely changing. Some of it changes, and I'm sure it's the same in your world, where you probably have more statistics and analytics that you can shake a stick at. And yet sometimes, even in the midst of having more information about who your audience is and what they're responding to, it doesn't tell the whole story. And so I have more information. I could tell you, okay, man, Dallas is listening to my music more than any other city in America today. And that's, I'm actually not making that up. I can look at the stats and I see it all happening. And a lot of that does inform and educate, like, where we should go on tour, what market is underdeveloped and why. And so there's a lot of that. And then social media helps a lot. But I think the way I'm measuring success is way different now than it used to be in the beginning. I think when you're in the beginning, you're sprinting and you're going 100 miles a minute. And it's like, I want to have this hit. I need another hit. I need another hit. And now it's like, I don't just want a hit song. I want a song that impacts people's lives. I want to write a song that is so real and so honest from my story that when somebody else hears it, it's not just a catchy song they like on the radio. It's a song that they're listening to in the midst of the biggest battle they're facing in their life. Like, I don't think it's too bold of an aspiration to consider my songs lifelines for people. Like, that's my mission in life, and is because I've seen it happen. I've seen how a 3-minute song has been a ray of light in somebody's darkness. And I, when you get a taste of that, like, that you want more of that, because that goes beyond just entertaining people. That's like that. Yeah. Gets, no, no. You get a taste of something that has more of a temporary impact and more or less of a temporary and more of an eternal impact. When somebody says, hey, you know what? Your song, Truth Be Told, has made me decide that, you know, I'm willing to man up and I'm going to a recovery program right now. Like, and that's not a hypothetical.
Right.
Like, when I hear that, it's like, that's what I want to be on this earth for.
I remember going to a Mercy Ships fundraiser type thing weekend, and they had a entertainers there. Gosh, I wish I could remember their name. And they had a rendition of Be Still. Ooh. And it was so good. And I listened to that on the subway. over and over again.
That's good to listen to that.
Yeah, and I'd be like, just like take a moment, like get inside, just first and have a quiet moment, and that really helped me get through some things during that time. I love this song of yours, Love on the Radio.
Yeah.
Was that you trying? Maybe tell people a little bit about that song. But I was curious as I was listening to it again today, that was that you basically saying, I'm not caving on who I'm going to be.
It really, it's kind of my mission statement. And ironically, that's one of my songs that's never been on the radio, but it's called Love on the Radio. And the whole song starts with this kind of spoken word thing. And it just says, people ask me all the time, why did you choose, you know, the kind of music you make, which is mostly known in Christian music. And they say, wouldn't you make more money if you were, quote unquote, mainstream? And then I go on to say, well, this song is my answer. And I guess what I'm saying in that song is, yes, there are probably more lucrative paths. You know, yes, if I was trying to be, you know, Bieber, I'd be on People magazine and, you know, all these other things. Maybe I could make more money. Maybe I could have more fame and all of these other things. But, you know, I think that song was my way of saying what I just said to you moments ago of just going, man, that's all well and good. And I've chased that in the past. But I'm going to tell you something, man. I want to write music that I simply want to bring hope to people. And I'll give you a good example, Dana. Like, in our genre, it's kind of funny because people, like, there's less face recognition. Like, you know, Keith Urban walks down the street and everybody knows, or Taylor Swift or whatever. But in our genre, people might know my name before they know my face. So when I'm at the airport, like, they don't know my face. And then the security guy looks at my ID and he sees my name. He's like, oh, are you the singer? Like, that's how that always happens, right? And one time I got noticed and this lady came up to me and she started freaking out about how much my songs had changed her life. Then she asked me for a picture, but she called me Chris Tomlin, who's another singer. You know, I mean, talk about being humbled, right? But I think that was a moment for me where I had to come to grips with, hey, what would I rather have people remember about me? Would I rather have them remember my name, or would I rather have them remember the message of the song that I sang for them that helped them find some hope during a hard time? And you know what? I will choose the latter every day of the week, because that to me is kind of what I'm trying to teach my daughters too, is like, your life is going to be the most fulfilling. You're going to get to the end of your life with no regrets and no what ifs if you were always mindful that there's a cause greater than yourself that you can contribute to in this life.
Amen.
When you're the main character of your story can only be so fulfilling. And when I'm the main character in my story, I'm the guy who's not happy about being nominated for a Grammy because he didn't get all the nominations. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be that person.
You know,
I want to be the person who realizes. Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's funny. I was just thinking about how in 2011, it was July, it was hot as heck. And I had just got back from Africa where I was doing some work on with Voice of America. And I was at baggage claim. I just like tired. And I get this phone call from a guy here at Fox News saying, hey, Dana, would you mind coming up to Fox to Manhattan, you know, for 5 weeks? We're just going to do this temporary program in between July 4th and Labor Day. Wow. We're going to call it the Five, and you just have to live in a hotel here in Midtown Manhattan for 5 weeks, but we'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't mind coming up and helping us out. And I was like, are you kidding me? Oh, but the Fox part of what I did at the time, post-White House, was my favorite part of my day. So I grudgingly said yes, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to leave my home and my husband and my dog, and I had all these other responsibilities at the time, and I called Peter. I didn't even know where he was because he traveled at the time a lot internationally. And I woke him up. He was in Korea. And I said, Peter, guess what? And I tell him this whole story. And his first reaction was, congratulations. And I said, what? And he said, Dana, this is what you've always wanted to do your whole life.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, right. And the Five just celebrated its 10th anniversary. And that's the longest I've ever held a job. And it's so interesting how people in your life, like your brother, saying, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then my other example of that is one time I was in, not too long ago, we were in Central Park and we're walking the dog, Jasper, and this guy jogs by and he does a double take and he takes his, I was going to call them hearing aids. They're not hearing aids. His headphones out. And he says, hey, is that Jasper? Like, yeah, it's Jasper. And he's like, oh, wow, it's amazing, amazing. And he's like, do you mind if I get a picture? I'm like, oh, no, sure. Peter will take it. So Peter gets the phone and Jasper, I get, you know, him in position. And then I move to get next to Jasper to be in the photo. And the guy says, oh, actually, just Jasper. And I was like, wow, okay. And that was humbling. That was humbling indeed.
That's amazing.
It was great. Well, I've loved talking to you. I'll let you go. I enjoyed it so much. I have really enjoyed getting to know you, and I think that our listeners are just going to absolutely love this. And I highly encourage everyone to go on whatever platform you have to get music. Look up Matthew West and all of these songs. Find one that connects with you, and you know, play it over and over again as you walk. I've been listening to "Hello, My Name Is."
Oh yeah,
quite a bit. I can play it. I can play that. And what if, how many times, like I think 2.5 times between where I work at Fox and where I walk to get home.
That's amazing. Well, you know, and those messages of both those songs line up with the heartbeat of your book. I mean, the way that you're empowering young women to make the most of the life, one life that they get, and to know their true identity and to not let it be affected by the world around them, you know, and those are things I'm trying to get my own daughters to latch onto. So, I mean, I can't tell you how cool it is to hear you say that you're listening to those songs on your way to work. And as you're inspiring so many people, it's just so cool. So keep up the great work. And I'm honored that you'd have me on the show. And I hope somebody listening today is encouraged by what we've shared.
They've got to be. Who could not be?
Come on, let's go. No what ifs.
Right? No what ifs, indeed. All right, Matthew West, thank you.
Thank you.
I love the conversation I had with Matthew West. I am super inspired, and as you can tell, I love his craft, and I want to learn more about it. But I was really interested in how he approaches fatherhood and raising independent young women. So excited to bring that Matthew West conversation to you. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review. I'm Dana Perino. Everything will be okay.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to Fox News podcast shows ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or follow wherever you get your podcasts.